Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Om Babaji. Om Lahari Mahashay. Om Shri Yukteswarji. Om Master. Om Mother. Saints and sages of all religions, we bow to thee. Lift us up. Illumine our minds, open our hearts with divine love. Be thou the only king that reigns upon our inner kingdom of our thoughts, our emotions, our bodies, that we may be perfect instruments carrying out thy will in all things. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Thought I'd read to you from the posting earlier this week about my health report. Dr. S., my saintly surgeon, and I will tell you a little bit about Dr. S., in that anytime that I see any other health professional that is in his system, they always say if I or any of my family needed any work done, I would go to Dr. S. And not only is he a highly proficient surgeon and doctor, but he's also a saintly man. He truly is. My saintly surgeon confirmed that all is well. Blood tests, PET scan, CT scan, and MRI, the best diagnostic tools modern medicine has to offer, confirmed that I am tumor-free and overall health is excellent. It's been 2 years now since I had a liver resection to remove a tumor, and 2.5 years since I had tumors removed from my small intestines. These operations saved the life of this body, and there has been no sign of tumor since. While health of the body is not the absolute arbiter of fulfillment, it certainly is an important ingredient to our abilities and our pleasures for day-to-day activities. A malfunctioning body and physical pain can dominate the mind and affect our mood. To a greater or lesser degree, sensations from the body and our ability to move and breathe will have its demands on our attention. However, to be master of ourselves, we must be the gatekeepers of how much energy we give to the body. In the same way that Swami Vivekananda said, "Do not make a religion of the kitchen. Do not make food and eating a fetish. Even more so, should we not put the body on the altar and worship it? The body is our instrument for operating in this physical plane. And like any instrument, a vehicle or a computer or a phone, we want to keep it in good operating condition so that it performs its functions well and gives pleasure to its operator. We should cultivate the practice of knowing that the operator of the machine and the machine are not one and the same thing. In deepened meditation, we have a growing awareness of the great I Am within, beyond the body, even superior to the mind and the individual soul. Living in the body, there are common sense things we can do to keep the body machine in good working order. Exercise and stretching, eating healthy foods. As Mother said, do not treat the body like a garbage can. And thinking healthy, positive God thoughts. I've experimented with different food regimens over the years with good results. In these past 20 plus years, it became obvious both gluten and dairy had deleterious effects on this body, so I gave them up. Recently, I've been experimenting with Dr. Gundry's ideas on focusing on the health of the gut and its relationship with the autoimmune disease, in particularly the role of dietary lectins and their negative effects on our digestive system. I am in phase 2 of 3 program and will report back in a few weeks with more details. To have the right relationship with the body then remain mindful of keeping the body healthy and doing what is best for its smooth functioning. There is a line, though, where you do not let the body and its relationship with the world control your life. Affirm, I have a body, but I am not this body. I have a body, but I am not this body. I have a body, but I am not this body. And give it its due, but no more. Practice finding the awareness that knows you existed before you took residence in this body, and knows you will exist long after this body has returned to dust. That while the body is important for accomplishing what you have come to do, it is just an instrument for your use. A remarkable instrument, it is true, but just an instrument. I'm pleased to have this excellent report from my medical team, as it gives me the time and freedom to accomplish what God has sent me here to do. And every day, I pray for your perfect health, so that you too may enjoy that same freedom and ability to do all your soul has intended for you in this lifetime. Use the gift of this marvelous machine to manifest your highest nature and to bring the light of the divine to this world through the instruments of your body, mind, and soul. So it is something to think about, this relationship with our body. You know, so oftentimes our first memories are associated with this body. And we don't recall what happened before, but that shouldn't come as a big surprise. We have so many gaps of memory of our first years in this body, and even when we were in the womb. And so the fact that we do not remember those years that happened before we entered into this body, the different bodies that we have taken as we have come along through the evolution of our consciousness. If it is necessary, God will remind you of various lifetimes that you have had in order to help release you from several patterns, different patterns that seem to make you stuck. If they don't offer a solution, there's no real benefit from going back to the past and discovering who you were at various times in your evolution. It can be mentally interesting, but it can be also be a sidetrack. There are also some dangers if you access a lifetime in which you were not mentally or physically healthy. Some of those things can come back with you as you return to your mindfulness of this world. So if God takes you, then there's a purpose for it. He has done this to me on many occasions, and I have remembered my past lives to the point where I have no doubt that we do exist before we come into this body, that we have had many lives, we have had many bodies. And once you begin to expand and open up to this, you realize why certain patterns have come with you, both strengths and challenges. Sometimes we wonder, why is this so difficult for me? And we look around and it seems like other people don't have any difficulties at all. And most times we're most aware of our difficulties. But we also come with strengths, things that we already know and we take for granted. And other people struggle with those things. How is it that a prodigy comes into this life and knows how to play the piano or violin or knows mathematics in a way that most adults couldn't even master? And it is because they have had that lifetime before. And they have perfected themselves and they have brought those strengths and those attributes with them. You must know that certainly Master had that coming into his body. He was so focused on saints and realization, meditation, the things to attain God realization, that he had had that so powerfully in his life. Other great saints and masters come into this incarnation. Excuse me. Excuse me. Come into an incarnation, and they take time before they really awaken to who they are. Papa did that. He was in his 30s before it really became a burning imperative that he have a spiritual life. For Mother, it was as well something that gradually formed, although she had attained full realization in previous lifetime. They do this for their play. They do it for a demonstration, for all kinds of reasons, some of which we can know, and much of it is far beyond what we know. But all of these patterns that we bring into this life, they are built up from previous lifetimes. So what you accomplish in this lifetime, the things that you master are important, not just for this lifetime, but for whatever you carry forward with you. If there are latencies of things that are untended to, then you will have to come back to this incarnation because it is particular to this material world. And so you will come back and you will have to master that in another lifetime. We generally know those things that provide difficulties for us, that are tough for us, and they should become our to-do list. Now, you may not master it all in a moment, particularly if it stems back through multiple lifetimes. These are very deeply ingrained patterns. But we should take the attitude. As I once said to God, I don't care if it takes me from now to forever. I will master this. And when you make that determination, and when you align yourself with God, you bring invisible forces to the fore, and they begin to help you. So don't forget that. So oftentimes in the things that we struggle with, perhaps there is shame or fear that is associated with it. And so we want to close it down. We want to just keep it inside of ourselves. But that's not possible. Everything that we are, everything that we have done is written on our brow. For highly realized souls, they can see us and they can read us like a book. So don't think that you can hide. I one time had the thought, all my thoughts, all my desires, everything are like they are broadcasted on the newspaper for everyone to read. I shouldn't feel that I have a private life. Now, each one of us has a right to our own privacy in that sense. But in the absolute sense, not at all. And so just feel, you don't have to tell everybody everything about yourself, but that you should feel that there is no secret part of you that no one else will ever know about. Because as Jesus said, what you do in secret, you think you do in secret, will actually be shouted from the rooftops. And so we see that in newspapers every day, don't we? I'd like to read from the posting this morning, and it's entitled Touched by Saints. And it has the most beautiful picture of two saints that I met while I was on the road to Rishikesh. I've had the great blessing to have been touched by saints in this life. I feel indescribable gratitude in thinking back on the grace that has flowed to me through these illumined ones. Memories streamed through my mind this morning, with several instances coming to mind from my first pilgrimage to India, the year 1998, and Phyllis had made it possible for me to travel in pilgrimage and discover spiritual India. After a couple of initially disappointing days, when first arriving in Delhi and then on up to Haridwar, I prayed to Babaji in the form of the Ganges while lighting a little flowered candle boat and setting it adrift in the flowing river, that Babaji should show me spiritual India. Immediately upon arriving back in the hotel, Babaji arranged everything, beyond all expectation, to answer my prayer. As a result of Babaji's unfolding grace, I had the opportunity to meet wonderful saints, and many of them unknown to the general public, leading quiet lives of sadhana and radiating their grace to all. One saint that came to mind this morning, who lived in a hut near a leper colony. Due to language barriers, I did not know his name, but I came to understand that he was over 100 years old. He did not look more than 60 years of age, and as he wore little more than a dhoti, he was open to full inspection. He chanted Ram Nam, and he radiated such light and joy that I wanted to just stay with him in his hut. He came to mind this morning, and it would not surprise me that he continues living in that hut. In thinking of him, the touch of his grace came to me through just the thought of him and brought me great upliftment. Time and space are not barriers to such a one, and his grace, oh, so easily transmit itself here and now. Then another two yogis I came into contact with while on the way from Haridwar to Rishikesh bubbled up in my memory. Anand, a generous soul who took it upon himself to guide us while we were in Haridwar, knew these yogis living in one-room apartment that was their ashram. What a feeling of purity when meeting these two souls. Swami Purananda Giri, a disciple of Swami Sarananda Giri, who is a disciple of masters, was the taller of the two, stately, withdrawn into himself, radiating a beautiful presence. Then there was his brother disciple, though not a Kriyavan. His name did not get recorded, but he chants Ram Nam, and oh, what light and joy emanates from the core of his being. It seemed that Mother's own path came in the form of these two yogis living together, one practicing Kriya Yoga meditation, and the other chanting Ram Nam. Anand translated an interesting comment by the Ram Nam yogi. He looked at me and he said, "You must have done a lot of spiritual sadhana in past lives in order to chant Ram Nam and practice spiritual sadhana, especially being all the way here from where you live in America." I had not told him I chanted Ram Nam, so how did he know? You know, saints really are wonderful. The touch of these saints did not come through their physical touch, nor was it their words, as these exchanges were not laced with much conversation. Rather, it was the touch of their beings, the touch of God in them that transmitted itself and continues to transmit its eternal message of purity, love, and joy that is God. I bow at the feet of these luminaries. They are not famous or known because they attract large crowds, but they know God and give what they know freely, without constraint or thought of what saint or organization you belong to, but only because they see God in you. It really is a tremendous thing to meet these saints, because they really do transmit something. You feel it when you're with them. Now, every spiritual soul has what you might call a signature. In the submarine world, they have radar and sonar, and they are able to detect things at various levels in the sea. And they call that the sound of an engine or that kind of a thing, a signature of that ship, of that whale, whatever it is that they're detecting. And so we also have a signature. It's not just in what we say, although that reflects our consciousness. It's not just in what we think. It's what we emanate from ourselves. And you meet some souls and you feel their intelligence, and your own mind is lit up with ideas and potential possibilities. I remember sitting in university classes and taking in ideas and could feel my neurons firing off. And it was exciting. And it is exciting. You meet somebody like that, and it's a wonderful thing. How much even more powerful is it to meet a spiritual being? They set off different aspects of yourself. They lift you up. They can send a surge of powerful charge all through your being. I was recounting last night how when I first met Mother, and as I was going closer to her, person by person, who were getting their hugs, and finally it was my turn, and I remember so distinctly that I began to hug her, I looked in her eyes, and I have not a memory at all of how I got to the car. Unfortunately, I hadn't driven. I had come with friends. And I got into the back seat. And they were talking about what Mother had spoken about that night. She had spoken about renunciation. And so in good humor, they thought they'd begin our lives of renunciation by stopping at Baskin and Robbins on the way home and getting an ice cream cone. And they were laughing, and, you know, but I remember looking and hearing at them, and it was like they were 1,000 miles away. I was looking at them through a telescope. And that was my first real conscious memory after hugging Mother. And I realized something happened here. I had no idea what that something was, but I was bound to get to the bottom of it. And that as the years went by, any time that I thought I was getting to the bottom of things, the bottom would drop out and I'd enter into a much larger universe than what I had had before. And this is the nature of God. If you think God is infinite and what we can contain within ourselves, what our minds can know within themselves, is so very little compared to the vastness of what God is. We can realize our oneness with God. We can realize our union and our unity, and through that, we can have insight into God's nature. We can be transformed into God's nature. And yet, the infinite nature of God will remain something beyond what we can comprehend in a human sense. Mother used to say that when she stood on this earth with her 2 feet, that she was connected with all of the earth. And this is true. And yet you think about those 2 feet, those are tiny little things compared to the size of the earth. And so we have both the human and the divine. We have both the soul and the Atman and the Paramatman. We have these various levels of understanding. And even when we completely cut the bonds with this body, and we enter into a union with God in spirit, and we feel that there is an endless ocean of which we are a part, which we have become one with. And even in that, we're not the everythingness, even though there are no boundaries, there are no limits. And there's a wonderful aspect of this. And that is, we will constantly, as long as we have an individual soul, we will constantly explore the vastness of what God is. It will be His great joy to constantly unfold various aspects of Himself. What causes us misery, what causes us suffering, is our separation from God. And so healing that separation and having our oneness with Him, we are no longer in suffering. Now, it doesn't mean that this body can't have pain. It doesn't mean that you won't even feel loss at times. But that's on the surface. There's a deeper knowing. There's a deeper place of silence, of stillness, that is untouched by the things of this world. And that is your deepest sense of soul. In that place, you know that you have always existed. I remember having that first realization where it's feelingly, I rose up above this body and time stretched out before behind me as in the past. And I felt it go out and out, and there is never a time that I was not. And then time stretched out in front of me, as far as my awareness could stretch. And I realized there is never a time that I will not be. And that is your eternal self. And with that consciousness, with that awareness, you lose fear of leaving this body. You lose fear of transitioning from this body into a light body or back into a physical body. The thing that you have really caused you so much problems through time, your separation from God, is now no longer a reality. Now, great souls such as Mother and Papa, when they come into this incarnation, they voluntarily give up that knowing oneness. That's what a sacrifice they're willing to make. Ananda Moyama, when she came into this life, she maintained that consciousness from the very beginning. But then she went through, I believe it was 7 years of sadhana, and she had this conscious separation from God. And then she practiced all of these different methods of attaining God consciousness. And because she was ignorant, she was suffering that. And then she would get the release of that. And she would go through these different methods, these different ways and means. And she did it all as a demonstration. A demonstration, as Mother would say, if I can do it, you can do it. And they were also taking on the karma of this world, of devotees who would come to them. And so they were helping them to work out their karma in advance by going through these various stages. And so there are so many different levels that a saint can help us and take us further along the way, things that we know and things that we don't know. I thought I would read from the autobiography of a yogi. And one of my favorite characters, you might say, out of the book, is Master Mahasaya. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, he's just lovable to start with. But the other is that he was the author of the Gospel of Ramakrishna. The Gospel of Ramakrishna is the kind of book that you can pick up at any point and start to read. And it was what the Gospel of Swami Ram Dass was based on. That's also so wonderful, by our dear Swami Satchidananda. If you've ever tried to reproduce a conversation, you've had some talk with somebody earlier in the day, then you go home and you try to write that down. It's a difficult thing to be able to do, to remember verbatim. And so Master Mahasaya would remember word for word what Ramakrishna and others would say in conversation, what do just descriptions. And later on, all the disciples said he got it exactly right. That's exactly how they remembered it as well. So Master is talking about first meeting Master Mahasaya. "Little sir, please be seated. I am talking to my Divine Mother." Silently I had entered the room in great awe. The angelic appearance of Master Mahasaya fairly dazzled me. With silky white beard and large lustrous eyes, he seemed an incarnation of purity. His upraised chin and folded hands surprised me that at my first visit had disturbed him in the midst of his devotions. His simple words of greeting produced the most violent effect my nature had so far experienced. The bitter separation of my mother's death I had thought the measure of all anguish. Now an agony at separation from my divine mother was an indescribable torture of the spirit. I fell moaning to the floor. "Little sir, quiet yourself." The saint was sympathetically distressed. Abandoned in some oceanic desolation, I clutched his feet as the sole raft of my rescue. "Holy sir, thy intercession. Ask Divine Mother if I find any favor in her sight." This promise is not one easily bestowed. The master was constrained to silence. Beyond reach of all doubt, I was convinced that Master Mahashaya was in intimate converse with the Universal Mother. It was deep humiliation to realize that my eyes were blind to her who even at this moment was perceptible to the faultless gaze of the saint. Shamelessly gripping his feet, deaf to his gentle remonstrances, I besought him again and again for his intervening grace. I will make your plea to the Beloved. The Master's capitulation came with a slow, compassionate smile. What power in those few words, that my being should know release from its stormy exile. Sir, remember your pledge. I shall return soon for her message. Joyful anticipation rang in my voice that only a moment ago had been sobbing in sorrow. How variable we are, isn't it? Descending the long stairway, I was overwhelmed by memories. This house of 50 Amherst Street, now the residence of Master Mahashaya, had once been my family home, scene of my mother's death. Here my human heart had broken for the vanished mother. And here today my spirit had been as though crucified by the absence of the Divine Mother. Hallowed walls, silent witness of my grievous hurts and final healing. My steps were eager as I returned to my Gurpar Road home. Seeking the seclusion of my small attic, I remained in meditation until 10 o'clock. The darkness of the warm Indian night was suddenly lit with a wondrous vision. Haloed in splendor, the Divine Mother stood before me. Her face, tenderly smiling, was beauty itself. Always have I loved thee. Ever shall I love thee. The celestial tone still ringing in the air, she disappeared. The sun on the following morning had hardly risen to an angle of decorum when I paid my second visit to Master Mahashaya. Climbing the staircase in the house of poignant memories, I reached his fourth floor room. The knob of the closed door was wrapped around with a cloth, a hint, I felt, that the saint desired privacy. As I stood irresolutely on the landing, the door was opened by the Master's welcoming hand. I knelt at his holy feet. In a playful mood, I wore a solemn mask over my face, hiding the divine elation. Sir, I have come very early, I confess, for your message. Did Beloved Mother say anything about me? Mischievous little sir. Not another remark would he make. Apparently my assumed gravity was unimpressive. Why so mysterious, so evasive? Do saints never speak plainly? Perhaps I was a little provoked. I find this a little bit ironic from Master, who is just trying to do a ruse on the saint himself, then he was upset with the saint for doing the same. Must you test me? His calm eyes were full of understanding. Could I add a single word this morning to the assurance you received last night at 10 o'clock from the beautiful mother herself? Master Mahashaya possessed control over the floodgates of my soul. Again, I plunged prostrate at his feet, but this time my tears welled from a bliss, not a pain past bearing. Think you that your devotion did not touch the infinite mercy? The motherhood of God that you have worshipped in forms both human and divine can never fail to answer your forsaken cry. Who was this simple saint whose least request to the universal spirit met with sweet acquiescence? His role in the world was humble, as befitted the greatest man of humility I ever knew. In this Amherst Street house, Master Mahashaya conducted a small high school for boys. No words of chastisement passed his lips, no rule or ferule maintained his discipline. Higher mathematics indeed were taught in those modest classrooms, and a chemistry of love absent from the textbooks. He spread his wisdom by spiritual contagion rather than impermeable precept. Consumed by the unsophisticated passion for the Divine Mother, the saint no more demanded the outward forms of respect than a child. "I am not your guru. He shall come a little later," he told me. Through his guidance, his experiences of the divine in terms of love and devotion shall be translated into his terms of fathomless wisdom. Masters, so many chapters were about his meeting with saints and, in most cases, the great benefit that he got from them. Occasionally, they weren't everything that they should have been. And sometimes he even chastised them, as he did with the perfume saint. But he was the great beneficiary, and he was so enthusiastic about seeking out saints that his friends had great delight in putting him on the trail of some new saint in the neighborhood that perhaps he hadn't heard of before. And so it was that he made his specialty, that of saints, not just to go as a tourist, not just to see what was interesting. He was seeking God, and he was seeking one who could show him the way to God. In India, it is a long tradition that you go to the guru in order to know God. In the West, we like to be self-reliant, so we think. And so sometimes we don't like to put ourselves under the guidance of anyone else. We want to find our own way. But this is like the hunt and peck method in typing. And you have to reach over here and you reach over there and perhaps you get the wrong keys and then you don't even make any sense out of what you are that you're typing. A guru will guide our minds. And I definitely knew somehow in my soul that I was seeking out a guru. I had been searching, I had been reading, and Eastern religion and philosophy had been what had attracted me the most. But I hadn't really run across the concept of God. I thought I had left that behind in the Christian religion when I left that behind. But that wasn't to be. But I didn't know anything about a guru, and I was reading a book one day about a man who met his guru. And it had a powerful effect on me. It didn't make me seek out one to go to India, but I started to seek out those who would come to Seattle, different speakers, different yogis, different spiritual beings. I even went to a spiritual camp where somebody talked through some kind of megaphone, and it was kind of interesting, but not what I was looking for at all, really. And so I finally, one day, was brought to Mother. And I didn't even think Mother was going to be the guru I was looking for. I don't know if I had a definite image, but I was thinking probably somebody from India. Somebody with long hair and a long beard, much as Master described Master Mahashay. But it wasn't what somebody described Mother before I met her as a kind of mother or a grandmother type person. And I thought, well, no, that's not what I'm looking for at all. Little did I know. But Mother arranged it for me to come. And such a powerful effect she had on me. But I wasn't particularly an easy sell. I had a critical mind. I didn't want to be sent on a fool's errand. I didn't want to just learn a philosophy. I was in real spiritual pain. And that's what I needed healing. And if that didn't get addressed, I wasn't interested. It had to be an experiential path. And that's exactly what I got. Mother said, "You don't have to believe anything that I say. Experience it for yourself." And I thought, yes. You know, I was about 2 years of being with Mother. And that doubting mind kept on crying, well, what if I'm getting these experiences and they're wonderful? But what if I get to the end of my life and I find out all of this is a lie? And it's not true. Would I regret following this path? So I went through this way of reasoning. And I thought to myself, would I follow any other path? Any other philosophy, anything else? And the answer was no. This is the highest path, the highest light that I knew of. And I would follow that as long as that is true. And with that doubting Thomas was set to rest. I would dedicate myself toward the truth, toward knowing the truth, realizing the truth. But that truth would be inwardly realized. Mother could say it on the outside, but I needed to know it on the inside. And I love that about this path, that you just don't have to swallow things wholesale. You aren't asked just to take everything on faith. Now, in the beginning, of course, we need a certain amount of faith. We need a certain amount of trust. We have to feel that we are on the right direction. But it is always that internal compass. And we know when we're aspiring for something higher and when we are deviating and taking a wrong path. I made it a practice many years ago that when I was faced with a decision, mentally I would surround myself with all the masters, all of our guru lineage, and I added Papa and Mataji and Swamiji to that. And I would surround myself with them. And I would present to them whatever choice I was having to make. And it was amazing how often there was some clarifying moment as I looked around these spiritual masters. Sri Yukteswar in particular was a tough one. I could never fool him. I couldn't fool any of them. But for some reason, looking at him, no amount of subtle persuasion that I was trying to convince myself that something wrong was right could stand in the face. And other times it would be Mother, and other times it would be Master, and Papa, and Swamiji, and all the rest. And it's a good practice to do, because it's taking that hidden desire out into the open. How does it stand the test of light? How does it stand the test of light? And when you can stand before God and Gurus, and say, in all good conscience, this is the highest light that I know. Then go with that. Proceed with that. And if you make a wrong decision, your sincerity is your greatest asset. Because you'll get so far down, and it's not just that things get difficult. I don't care for it so much when people say, well, I started doing something and then it didn't go very smoothly. I took that as a sign that God was telling me not to do that. That's perhaps. But every worthwhile goal is going to have its oppositional goal, its oppositional force. And so just the fact that things are rough sailing isn't a guarantee that that's God telling you not to go. It's just maybe that that's a very worthy goal, a very high goal, and therefore it brings with it a very powerful opposing force. You have to consider that. The real sign that you look for is that inward yes. But you may get so far down the road, and suddenly, it's not just that things are difficult. You get that soul sickness down in your solar plexus, down in your stomach area. And there's an unsettled sense of it. This isn't right. Something's wrong about this. Now, it may be that you got most of it right, but there's a part of it you got wrong. We have to be very careful when we say that God spoke to me, God said this, God said that, that our mind doesn't get in there from the initial instigation of what God actually said, and we start adding things to it. I think that's happened many times in different religions, where somebody did get an inspiration, but then the mind got in there and got busy, and it took it places that it had no business doing. And as a result of that, mass confusion, difficulty, suffering that has been visited on this world, sometimes from that moment to this. And it takes a long time to correct it. So while we must be careful not to cut ourselves off and say, well, God couldn't speak to me, I'm just this little one. No. That is your nature. That is part of your inheritance. When you have done the work to purify the mind, to be receptive to that pure spiritual consciousness, so you should always be open to that, always seeking it. Master, in this story, he didn't think, well, I haven't led that good of a life. Divine Mother would never come to me. His tense need to be connected to the Divine Mother, and it was something that lasted with him all of his life. You know, when I began the spiritual path, I didn't have any personal conception of God, in the sense that I saw him as a person, such as a Divine Mother or a Heavenly Father. A beard, a man sitting in a chair someplace on a throne. That was never in my mind. But as I have gone down this path, I have gained a real affection and appreciation for the different aspects of God that there are. And these wonderful stories that are handed down to us about saints and about manifestations of God. And they are really thrilling. They're uplifting. And both are true. God is personal and God is impersonal. If God was not personal, he could not have created us because we're very personal generally. And he can't create something out of nothing. That has to be part of his nature. And yet he is also eternal. He is also unchangeable. There is that aspect of him that is so. So there is that part of him that is also impersonal. And we can know him as both, and really both at the same time. God is that still point inside of your heart center, in that uplifted consciousness where no thought intrudes, no emotion is present. It's pure sense of being. That is God in his impersonal nature. And then God breathes out and manifests this entire universe. And you enter into consciousness of this universe. And you become personal. You have relationship with different people and different things. Now in the beginning, this is the problem because we identify with those outward things. That relationship with them begins to define us because we come into this body. That's our first relationship with this body. If this body is in pain, we are in pain. If this body wants something, we want something. We are bound to it. We're fused with it. But through our spiritual growing consciousness, the great I am within us starts to grow. And that knows itself to be something other than all of these material things around us or this body. And so we can say, I have a body, but I am not this body. I have this possession, but I am not defined by this possession. When God asked me to make this change in life and leave my profession, leave my home and everything else. I had a storage room with mother's books in it and a few possessions, and that was it. And then God thought it was his great fun to start adding to that. And now I'm surrounded by all kinds of stuff that I'm responsible for. And if all of it disappeared today, I wouldn't be that much the sorrier for it. Because everything requires something from you. And to prove that, just clean out your closet and get rid of things and see how much lighter you feel. See how good it feels to get rid of things that you might be holding on to. I've been working on that, and I've been working on my garage because I hadn't done that when we had moved. And so trying to get rid of everything that no longer fits, no longer gives me that spark of joy. And it's a good thing to go through. But God also wants us to have things in this world if that is his will. Even the yogi who is wandering as a sadhu, he's still got a little cup that he collects his food in and that he has his water in and He has perhaps a walking stick, a danda. He has these possessions. And Papa told the story of one night where he was chanting and chanting, and some very odd person came into the little hut that he was in. And he started demanding things from Papa. His cup and this and that and the other thing. And Papa just cheerfully gave it all over to him. And finally he demanded his little dhoti cloth, the only thing that he had left covering him at all. And Papa started taking that off. And then the man said, no, 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 you keep that. And then he left with all of Papa's stuff. And to Papa, this is God who came to him and took all of his things. And he went into ecstasy. He was so thrilled that God had come to him in this form. And late in the morning the next day, he finally opened his eyes. He came out of this state of ecstasy. And these devotees were all sitting around, and they were wondering, where did all of your things go to, Papa? And so he told the story. And by that afternoon, they had replaced everything that the man had taken. Probably gave him some more in addition. But he walked Oribe once, so it tends to keep you going light. And Papa would just take a spare cloth. He had his false teeth in a little bag. He had his glasses. He had a little cup, a little walking stick. And that was it. And he wandered free. And then eventually, God gave him an ashram. Well, an ashram is a family multiplied many, many times. And you get all the human dynamics within an ashram. And you get all the responsibilities. And so, in a way, God took Papa right back into the world. Now, it's a spiritual institution, be sure. But nevertheless, it was so many things of the world that he now had to take on. And there's many times when he thought, I just want to leave this place and just wander free once again. But God kept him there. And just like Lari Mahashai, when the great Trailyanga, who is a total renunciate, even renounced his clothes. And he paid utmost respects to Lari Mahashai. And Trailyanga was thought of as a Christ. Master said that if Christ himself came and walked through the streets of New York, he would make no bigger stir than what Trailyanga did. And so the disciples were astounded. Here is his householder. And Trailyanga is paying him such respects, and he's an unknown man. They didn't know him as a great spiritual man. And Trailyanga said, Lari Mahashai is like a divine kitten. He just stays put wherever God puts him. And this is the way that it is for us. Your life is perfectly designed for you. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't make changes. God may be prompting you to make changes. But it's perfectly designed for you. And to accept that, to say, yes, this body, this home, or the lack of home, or this whatever, this profession, all of it, it's designed perfectly for me. And when you accept that, and you accept it as God manifesting, has all of these things to teach you exactly what you need to be taught, then you see you're in right relationship with your life. Now, God may be prompting you to change certain things about it and to bring it into alignment. Or sometimes there's just a certain life to something. And you do something or you live something someplace for a little while, and then there's a shift in tide, and it's time to go. And when you feel that shift of tide, you don't have any attachment. You say, all right, and you let it all go. And then God takes you into the next stage of your life. And it's a wonderful life that way, you see. And you don't resent. You're not constantly looking to the next guy. Oh, if I only had his life. It'd be so easy. It'd be so much better than what I have. But you never know. You never know the interior life of another person. and what they might be struggling with, and it might be much more difficult than what you have. You just don't know. So you accept what God gives you as perfectly designed for you. Now, whether we have saints near and dear or further away, we can all get benefit from them. When we read these stories from Master, who could read the autobiography and not be touched? Not be changed? I've had friends who have read it, and they've had some tremendous experience while reading it, but they didn't follow this path. It wasn't for them. But Master gave them a gift, gave them something to accelerate their evolution and to help them to know God greater, whether they choose to do that in this lifetime or not. It will hold them in good stead. But who could read the autobiography and not be changed? I defy anyone not to have some response, some experience, when they read all of these stories about these great, great saints, because there's a spiritual charge. So Master gave such a tremendous gift when he told not only about his life, but the lives of so many others. How Sri Yukteswar just shines from these pages. You almost think in some ways it's more of a book about Sri Yukteswar than it is about Master. And I think Master would be very pleased by that. So we touch the lives of saints. And saints, in turn, change our lives. Their grace comes to us. This is true in our guru lineage. It is true in saints everywhere, you know, in the lessons that Master wrote. He originally said, when you go to India, be sure to visit her saints. They took that out because the organization only wanted people to come to their sites and not seek out other saints while they're there. But it's wonderful. I feel so privileged to be able to meet these saints, to have my life changed by these saints. And even this morning, thinking back on these saints and feeling their grace come in the here and now, not just there and then, but a living presence that continues that connection. All of our lives can be touched by saints. And we have some living that are not that far from us. So let us open ourselves. Joseph Campbell, who talked about the power of myth, and said how easy it is to think of a river at some distant place as being sacred. But how much more difficult it seems like for many people to accept the fact that a river that might be very close by is sacred as well. We don't have to be looking to distant places. We can be looking right in our own backyard. Where is God manifesting? And if we will look, we will find. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram. Blessings to you. God may bless you, that his saints may bless you and lift you up, that you will never be the same. That you will experience his bliss, his joy, his purity, his illumined consciousness. Victory to God, victory to the light.